talking, mom's talking, just a couple of moms talking. All right, moms, welcome back. It's episode 6 of
Moms Talking.
You guys want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Andrea.
It's Karen. I'm back.
Woohoo! And I'm Patty. So Karen's back this week after being sick.
Yes.
How are you feeling? Now you can tell me.
Better. Now I can see the description. I'm feeling so much better. I had the nastiest cold that I have had in years.
I'm sorry.
It was only like a 4 day, so maybe it was more of a flu / cold thing, but I'm better. 100%.
And this is Karen's birthday weekend.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Woo.
29.
Oh, yeah. 29, almost 29 years ago.
No. not quite. But yeah,
not quite.
And we're missing Jackie this week. She had an emergency she had to be out of town for. But we're going to talk about the wage gap this week. And I know Jackie was going to have some data on people who say it doesn't exist.
Yeah, the counter.
Yeah, point. So rather than just try to fill in on that, I'm hoping she can fill us in next week when she's back.
Sounds good.
Because it's a big topic, so we can definitely keep talking about this as time goes on. And we're missing Pam. Pam's made it to one episode so far. Because she has grown children, so she has a very exciting life. But she told us this week that she's going to be a, what did she say, Karen? It's a district precinct captain for the Democratic Party.
Wow.
Yeah, in her area in Arizona. So,
yeah. She's going to have like 100 registered Democrats that she's in charge of making sure vote and that they're informed on the issues and all that. So that's great.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what we need. Good information. Boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground.
Yeah. So I'm excited for her to come back on the podcast and tell us what she's doing.
What she's finding out there,
what their strategy is and all of that. They did tell her, don't worry about converting anybody. You're just in charge of Democrats.
We're already on the team. Mm-hmm. Already on the team. Just focus in.
Get them out to vote. She also had an experience this week talking to Trump voters. And I don't want to tell her story, but I'm hoping she'll come and tell us about that if she wants to.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting one, right, Karen?
Yes. Emotional. Very late night texts.
Yeah, we got some late night frustrated texts from her. So
nice you guys have the support group there to.
Yeah. We need it these days.
Yeah, we all do.
Karen, did you get a chance to listen to last week's podcast?
I didn't. I listened to the first probably 3/4 of it, and I got to get through the last part of it. But yeah, I mean, I think for me, I'm lucky in that I do live in a very integrated, very liberal area. You know, I told Patty that even the high school where my husband works talks about, we support, you know, DACA. And, you know, I don't have many people in my life that I have conflicts with as far as what's going on, which I guess I've been lucky in that way.
Yeah.
Maybe more because of, you know, my profession and or where we live. But doesn't mean it doesn't happen every day on the media and everywhere else I go. So
yeah. It's everywhere around us. And I know I've been thinking a lot about our conversation. Andrea advocated so courageously for
me, having, for situational. I think it's very situational.
Having discussions, keeping the dialogue open. So I've been trying to, and Jackie and I were both like, no, we can't do it. Nope, can't do it.
Well, it's situational. Jackie, like in hindsight, watching Jackie for years, and I should let her show us, but she's had all those conversations with her family.
She's lived it for a long time.
And she's had the conversations. Yeah. She did. You don't need to keep beating a dead horse, but just I was like the initial and situational, like Thanksgiving, you know,
right.
Weddings, parties, you know. No, not so much.
Yeah,
but situational.
Depends on who the people are. Yeah, and it's kind of topical because, you know, I do have a friend who's very liberal, but her husband served 2 terms in Iraq. And when it comes to the whole flag thing, you know, and the bend knee, she's just not going to you know, even though she agrees with the protest conceptually, she does not agree with bending the knee for the flag. So, you know, on those, like you said, those things, you kind of pick your battles. I understand her perspective.
Yeah.
You know?
And the battle wasn't like, I think the topic last week wasn't even battling or convincing. It was being open to hearing everyone having a voice.
Exactly.
And I did did I just see yesterday on the news? I'm trying to think which news I was watching, but they had a guy from Iraq on there who was, I think it was just ABC or NBC, it was one of those, who adamantly spoke up, and I thought for sure he was going to take that stance, but he spoke up of saying, hey, I went to Iraq and I fought hard for freedom of speech. That is the what I'm fighting for. So I was like pleasantly surprised. I kind of walked by the TV thinking for sure he's going to be in that camp.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where I'm coming from. I'm trying not to make, I found myself making a lot of assumptions, and I'm showing, shining the light on myself there and trying to be more open and not make those assumptions. Ask. Like, why not ask?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think you recommended a really good TED Talk, which we posted the link to on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Theo, do you remember his name?
Well, I want to say Wilson. It was with a W.
Okay.
EJ Wilson.
It's there. Yeah. It's there on the Facebook page.
Thank you. I couldn't upload, and I think it's from my phone. I wasn't successful.
That's okay. It's there, and I listened to that. So he is a black man who kind of went undercover online into some of these racist chat rooms, and then he kind of flipped that and tried to create conversations with those people. And there was a... I know that the Obama Foundation is working on funding some of these groups that are trying to create dialogue. And there was a real interesting one that I heard about this week where they hold dinner parties, essentially. And they, in different cities around the country, they're being funded through Obama's foundation. And you come to the table and they have scripted questions for you to help open the dialogue. But
so all different parties are at the table?
Mm-hmm.
That is fascinating. Yeah. So that would be what you were saying last week, being proactively boots on the ground. I was like, oh, if you're in a room and someone mentions it, have the conversation. But that's a very
they're
proactive
trying to create the situation. Yeah.
Step, conflict resolution. Or...
But the thing that I noticed about both of these groups was that they leave Trump out of the conversation. Do you know what I mean? And it's like,
issue by issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important,
The kind of questions that they ask are very broad, at least for the group that does the dinner parties. It's like, what do you want for your community? What do you want for your future? And so it's like, it's broad enough that you...
Find the common ground.
And then
work
backwards.
That's awesome. That's exactly like what I was shooting for.
That's why I feel like...
I love it.
As much as we want to argue people... you know, who hold these opposing views and try and understand how they got there or see if we can change their minds. Maybe the approach is
finding a common ground.
Yeah.
That's definitely
start so broad.
I believe that I believe in that 100%.
Yeah. So that seems like in any case, so even though I said I really can't talk to people about why they voted for Trump, I think I would love to be in some of these dinner party conversations. That would be a really interesting experience. And like I said, I know plenty of people who voted for Trump. And, you know, we function as a community and we don't talk about these things.
Yeah.
But I think, obviously, we have some common goals and ideas. So for 2020, we just need to find somebody who can tap into everybody's... The goals and objectives that we share.
Right, and communicate how their plan's going to get you there.
Yeah, because Obama was able to do it, right? So it's not impossible, even with all of our racism, sexism, and other imperfections that exist.
Two terms.
Yeah. Yeah, two terms. Exactly.
Terms. And,
And Hillary did win the popular vote.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So I've got a lot of hope.
Yeah.
And a few, like I was saying with that perspective stuff and then the racism, like I know a lot of people being in those swing states who voted for him twice, but not this time.
Yeah.
So it was like losing that faith, losing that message, desperation, not having something to hold on to. So I think you're right. Finding strong message.
Yeah, and maybe just looking forward. We can't keep looking back.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very painful. I think at some point in the future we'll want to look back, but right now it's too close. Who's there, Karen?
Sorry, that's my daughter
asking me
a question.
That's okay. I said hello.
What I was just thinking as you were talking, too, I think, I don't know, for me, well, I think it's really important – to hear and listen to what other people say. I think for me, I'm at a point too where I'm just not going to negotiate certain things anymore. Mm-hmm. You know,
right?
If you're going to tell me you voted for Trump, but you know still believe in certain things and you are anti other things, I mean, I'm just not going to be polite about certain things anymore.
Yeah, I think that's my
responsibility to stand up and say, well, you know, I'm sorry, but that was a racist comment, and I'm sorry. It is, you know, Puerto Ricans are Americans, and you know what I mean.
Things yeah, like I do that. Exactly what you mean.
And you know, they have a right to bend the knee, and you and I can disagree, but I'm not going to be quiet.
Right.
About it.
Right, we can disagree.
We don't have to. We can be respectful, but we don't have to be polite. And especially, I think as women, we're expected to be so, you know, gracious and, you know, yielding. Right. And I think for us, you know, as women, we need to stand up and say, well, wait a minute, I don't feel that way.
Yep.
It's okay, you don't feel that way, but I feel this way.
What does Kamala say? Courage, not courtesy.
That's right.
That's right. She floated that out, yeah. I think, as she's looking for her slogan for 2020, but she floated that out there a while back.
Oh, yeah.
I got my Kamala bumper sticker that says courage, not courtesy. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see if that sticks. I don't know.
Yeah.
We may I don't know. And when I see some of the uncourteous things Trump says, that's like a hot spot for me.
Yeah.
I think you can speak up. I think you can be
exactly
tell your truth with still not being a jerk about it. You know?
Of course.
So it's a fine line.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is these are peaceful protests. People are kneeling. It's peaceful. We can disagree, but it's still a peaceful, polite.
Right.
I mean, nobody is, you know, punching, hitting, you know, I think it's so significant and moving that so many people are coming to those discussions without screaming and yelling.
Yes,
now, that it is a productive conversation.
Yeah.
I think that's
well, Colin, like they said, all he ever wanted was for people to talk about Black Lives Matter, and he has accomplished that.
Yeah.
Trump unwittingly helped him bring it to the fore. So we'll keep talking about this because I just feel like our feelings will just keep evolving as time goes on.
And
so
situations come up. And...
Yeah. And I hopefully you guys like for your yes, no's, if you come across groups that are doing interesting things or strategies.
I have a small yes. We'll have to wait till the end.
Yeah, do it at the do it when we get
the
yes.
The tiniest group with a little strategy.
Don't jump ahead.
Cool. Yeah,
we save have a it.
We'll
it
wait.
It was on topic. So
we'll be we'll anxiously anticipate that because we do have to get to the wage
exciting,
gap.
But yeah.
So, well,
alrighty.
Yeah. So I know you guys already have been doing your research, but for our listeners, so the wage gap is. This idea that women in general get paid 80 cents for every dollar that white men make, right? And it's based on census data. It's been compiled mostly by the American Association of University Women. They've got the most well-read study, and they break it down in a lot of different ways. But there are... obviously, there are people who contest this. There's a lot of reasons that women get paid less, including the fact that they often take time off to raise kids. They do tend to work fewer hours than men because generally they're the primary caregivers and they're doing most of the work at home, of maintaining the household. A lot of times they do not attain the same level of education as men because they're doing all these other things in their lives. But there are other studies that show even if you account for all those factors and you're trying to compare apples to apples, the gap is still 7 to 8%. So, in other words, including all those other factors, which may or may not have to do with, you know, gender discrimination. There's still gender discrimination in the way that women are being paid. And it gets worse for women of color. It gets worse as we get older. So the more experience that women get, the farther behind they're falling compared to their male counterparts. It starts 1 year out of college. So it's not like women are falling behind because they're having children. The bias exists right out of school.
Right at the hiring point.
Mm-hmm. Right when women are starting their careers. And it's a really, it has a really powerful impact on women over their lifetimes. They're saying, like, women wind up $1 million behind men when it comes to saving for retirement because of the way this accrues over their lifetime. It takes them longer to pay off their student loans. And this becomes more important as more women are becoming, A, the primary breadwinners in their families, and B, you know, think about the impact on single mothers.
Yes, and that's exactly what I was thinking.
How much harder it is for them to take care of their families, but also plan for their own futures.
Keep their house.
Yeah. So, Karen, you had some data on the impact of the wage gap in education. I was thinking that would be a good one for us to look at as kind of a case study, since you guys are both in education. And I could talk a little bit to my experience in my workplace. But let's start with what you've got.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, it's not a simple, you know, I read the full AAUW article, and, you know, the key points, too, is even though you think college education, and by the way, women are going to college at a higher rate than men, especially women of color, especially black women are going to college at a higher rate than black males. We still have a ways to go. And just women's earnings are 10 years after they first enrolled in college are lower than working men's earnings only 6 years after enrolling at public and private nonprofit four-year colleges. So for men, it doesn't matter where they go to college. They're still making more after 6 years than women are in 10 years, which is pretty amazing.
That's annoying.
So, So summarizing how it affects education, basically if there are professions that are dominated by women, they are typically lower paid. And interestingly, computer science is one of these that is showing this trend, because originally it was male dominated. And now as more women are going to computer science, the pay is lowering in the computer science field. So men, women are still going into STEM-related fields at a lower rate, and even in education, STEM teachers, which would primarily be your middle school, high school teachers, make more money because there are more opportunities for them to earn extra income. So they can take on extra periods, they can take on coaching stipends, they can, and these are predominantly male. They also get stipends for special trainings or for being, you know, STEM certified in certain areas. They are recipients of grants more often, having to do with STEM, engineering, biology, and science related scholarships for their classrooms and, you know, for their personal professional development as well. And there's also a big discrepancy in administration. We still have more males in administration than we do females, while the majority of teachers are females. And typically, your females are predominant in your primary grades, K through 6, and males in your 7 through 12. So, again, you have the females working, you know, a 7:40 to 3:30 schedule, and they don't have, they're teaching all the content areas, so they don't have the opportunity to do these extra activities that can earn them extra monies. Whereas if you're teaching middle school or high school, you get a free period every day. You could do a payback period where you're teaching a specialty, and then you're getting paid for the period that you normally would get as a free period. And again, you are available to do extra trainings and extra professional development and opportunities. So interesting thing too, when you were talking about online training is, you know, you would think it would help women to be at home because there are more available resources for women for higher education and to work from home. You know, I do a lot of work and teaching online, et cetera. But actually, it doesn't necessarily benefit a female to not be in the office. And this is one of the things they were talking about in that AAUW article, is that when women work from home, they tend to suffer more because they're not getting those personal benefits of the encounters that are happening amongst male colleagues at the office.
Right.
They're
not so there to advocate for
They're not kind of out of sight, out of mind, too, a little.
Right, right.
Yeah,
right.
They're not part of the club. So when they do come into the office, you know, they have to work harder to make those connections. And then, you know, that kind of puts you out of the pool or the advantage of getting raises or getting the account, et cetera. So, so interesting. So decisions that women make about their occupation, you know, don't happen in a vacuum. They happen because of the way our society is shaped and the way we have, you know, allow is not the right word, but the tracks that women are pushed into as early as primary grades. And those tend to be lower paid occupations, which education is one of them. So as long as it's thought of as a woman's career, it will never get the same respect as other professions that even take, honestly, less training, less education. So
what do you think?
Interesting.
I think it's interesting because on that site, that article too, I saw they compared a male parking cars to a woman who's a child care provider.
Yeah.
And that killed me too. Like that person gets paid more than, so it is, it's totally about not valuing the service provided.
Not valuing the service provided and not valuing children, which is really interesting to me.
Yes.
I mean, I've been reading a biography of Charles Dickens, and I was like, they talk about how, you know, they treated children in the Victorian age. And I was like, I thought we were past that. But there still seems to be some of that ingrained in our society. Like, obviously, there's a lot of tiger mommies around, but there's also this, like, at least in when it comes to policy, this idea the work of caring for children is not very important. And it's so strange to me.
You know, just from other research that I've read through my own education is that it, also when you look at careers that are altruistic, nursing, teaching, caretaking, those are considered feminine roles. And so they're never going to be respected. It's part of what a woman's supposed to do. So it's not going to be valued the same way as a male profession.
Right.
So even the child care worker gets paid less than the man parking. It's because it's a feminine thing to do. It's just not valued the same way in anything that a male would do. And that's what they're talking about is the, you know, society shapes the values of wage.
Right. So. Well, I was going to tell you guys, like in my experience, so I work in marketing and in digital marketing. And it's really interesting because I've always worked for small companies. And so very often there's no one who does exactly what I do. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any way to compare, you know, what a male colleague might get paid. But I do know I've had experience where I've had like a partnership with someone who doesn't have the same title, but we're partnered on a project. And I'm oftentimes find like, I'm doing most of the work. I'm providing most of the knowledge to move a project forward. And I know that my male colleague is getting paid a lot more than I am.
I had the same experience in marketing, but it was the same title, the exact same job. He moved out of the job. Mm-hmm. This is in my 20s at a national sales manager for a watch company. I worked under him, so I was assisting, so I knew all the ins and outs. When he moved out of the job, I moved in. My salary went significantly up, so I was ecstatic, but it was not what he was making for that same job.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Yeah, but it's so hard, like you said, so it's hard to say. So could they turn around and say to you, but Andrea, he had many more years experience. So at some point, maybe you'll make as much as he will. It's so hard to advocate for yourself on these issues because, like you said, it can be so circumstantial. Mm-hmm. And you and I know in our hearts that our work is equal to what our male colleague is doing, but we don't have a specific way to prove that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And what do you know, how do they structure their pay? Is it based on years of service or the quality of service?
Right.
And there's it's hard to compare both of those things or articulate or have that in a policy in companies.
And how do you account for, you know, existing bias too?
Right.
Like, because your employer's going to say, I'm not biased against you because
you're a woman. That's what I'm curious and I feel like how much of us is that underlying bias. Like, they don't realize they're biased.
When they're hiring
two people out of college, same degree, how can you not see that the salary you're offering is different. You know, like right. at that point, there's no way you cannot see that.
Right.
Right? Because it's now you're apples to apples.
Well, I think that's why the data is so important. I mean, mm-hmm. we're kind of lucky that we live in that age of big data where this stuff can be crunched and we can see overall there is this bias, even if you can't account for it in your own workplace. You know, it gives us a basis for legislation, which obviously isn't going to happen under this administration. Right. And in fact, under Obama, the EEOC was given funding to collect more data. And they were asking employers to provide more detailed information so that we could really get into this nitty gritty, like, what should a marketing person make? What should a teacher make? Mm-hmm. What should a parking lot attendant make?
Equal work for mm-hmm. equal pay, right?
Right,
equal pay for
right.
equal work.
Now, surprise, surprise, that funding has been cut by the Trump administration. And there were some efforts in Congress to get it put back in, but... so far, those efforts have failed. So I don't think we're going to get that data.
That's not going to happen in this.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because I was telling you I was trying to look up just a basic wage gap by race. Or I was trying to find information, and I thought I would just get charts popping up all over. I had to dig and look, and I just thought, well, that's interesting. You'd think that would be out there.
Well, I did find
research by race.
Okay, before we get into race, I just want to ask you guys if you have any strategies for how to advocate for yourself. Maybe this will be another podcast episode because it's tricky.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I know I have one idea that I came across. I know for most women, our strategy has been to be most excellent at our jobs, you know?
Yeah.
So again, we work harder. Mm-hmm. I try to work smarter because mm-hmm. I don't necessarily want to work more hours. And I actually question whether, although men are putting in more hours at the office, are they really working more hours or are they just able to be at the office? Like Karen said, taking advantage of that networking and clubbiness. But I mean, I know,
something comes to mind now that became like, teaching. I always think, oh, we're all the same. It's just, you know, you're on a slot on the scale. It's this many years. It's this many credits. But a lot of times a committee worker, an extra work will come up. For years, I had been putting on these committees and just doing them.
Right.
And then we get this one fellow working at our school. He's teaching a middle school grade. He's a fella. And he gets put on a committee. And right away he says, well, what are you going to pay me for that? I should be paid for that. but they did. And so after watching him do that, then I was like, oh, that should be paid work. You know, like it didn't even occur to me to ask before. It's like, you know, it's a finite salary and you just do whatever's asked of you at the job. So there's one way to advocate, which I wouldn't even thought that there was room to move in that area where I'm at as a elementary school teacher. But I learned a little bit from his move on that, I have to say. And that's like... trying to pick up those extra opportunities and fight for those opportunities that you see males getting.
Sometimes we don't think to ask. I agree with you.
Yeah.
We're always rushing to do more and then we feel timid about asking.
And what you say, the altruism of the field. It's, well, I'm here to help kids, whatever it takes, I'll do. That's my mentality. And then, but your time and what you're doing is worth something.
It is,
and that's
always how
you change the societal value of it.
Right.
It is. I have to tell you, I guess, that this is worth something.
Right.
You know.
Well, I did read one article where they said that millennial women do this more often, where they leave jobs. They just leave because they've like flipped the thinking where it's not your responsibility to ask for more pay. It's responsibility for your employer to pay you more.
Yeah.
So if you find someone who's going to pay you more for the same level of work, just leave. You don't need to feel loyal.
I think that is a male mentality that they already own and have. Now, our superintendent just got an increase of pay, but one of the pros of why they gave him the amount they gave him was because they wanted to retain him. They didn't want him to leave. So there's an underlying assumption of if we don't dangle it out there to keep him, we'll lose this quality person.
Right.
So I think you're absolutely right.
I will say I'm not a millennial, but I have employed this in my own career because I took, you know, time off and went off of my current career track when I had a kid and came back in and literally had to start, you know, like at part-time and almost entry level. And I just set my strategy was every 2 years. I'm going to set my next pay goal and I'm going to look until I find a job at that level. And it does get to the point where people are like, oh, we didn't realize you had all these skills and, you know, maybe we could match that pay. We hate to lose someone with, you know, you've built up two years of knowledge of the company and how things work. So, yeah, I always move anyways because I'm like, I sort of feel like if you hadn't noticed, you know, in the last 2 years what my capabilities were, then
it's time for me to go.
I need to go somewhere else. But
I guess too, interestingly, I work with millennials, so it's bothersome when they check out, when they don't get things their way sometimes. But yeah. I can see what you're saying about that because, you know, I've been in the same career for going on almost on to, you know, 30 years. But, you know, when males enter the primary classrooms, I always hear, oh, it's, we need more males in the primary grades. And it's so great to have young men. And I'm, you know what? I've started asking the people that say that, why? Explain to me why that's better. And I understand the male role models, but I think, so that's one thing I've been doing is I want to hear your side of that, articulate that to me because, you know, they're great, but I want to understand why that's, oh, we need these men. And then I've also been a mentor teacher and have watched young male teachers who were not, in my opinion, ready, be promoted very quickly. 2-3 years in the classroom and they're being groomed to be principals. And I have said, this is not a quality teacher. This is, you know, they're struggling with this and that and this, but my voice was not heard. Mm. And funny what, you know, Patty, you said, I have all these qualifications and nobody noticed. One thing I've started doing for myself is I keep an ongoing vita now. Whenever I teach a class or whenever I go to a training or whatever, I just keep adding to my vita. And whenever there's an opportunity to show it, that's I show great. It now.
Good for you.
Because, you know, and I got a 15-year service award and my boss at the time, she said, oh, send me your vita so I can, you know, do a little spiel about you. I sent it to her and she emailed me back and said, I had no idea you did all this stuff, which is so funny to me that, you know, so I think that's what, you know, what we were talking about earlier in the podcast too. You know, women, we don't want to be impolite. We don't want to seem like we're being boisterous or, you know, well, men sing their praises all the time in any field.
Right. And you gotta self-advocate.
I realized if I don't do that, then I'm not going to get the opportunities. And you know, what really pushed me to do was to earn, you know, extra money consulting and stuff for my kids.
Right.
So
then because I realized, more women are the primary breadwinners in their family, you know, and or we're providing a big part of our income.
In it. I realized about when I hit 45, I thought, you know, I have a lot of quality experience. I started looking around at other people, male and female, and said, I know how to do that.
Yeah.
And I started saying, I am qualified and here's my hand. And, you know, just like you said, I'm going to be on this committee and I'm going to do this. And I think I really try to encourage my millennials to do that. You know, you are qualified. Here's why. And keep a track of what you've done. Because, you know, sometimes you'll sit in a room and hear what all these people have done. And you may not even realize you are just as qualified as they are. And, you know, you do have an opinion and you have a voice and it's okay.
Yep. It's okay. Know? Well, that brings me to a thought I was having listening to my Hillary book. Listening to what happened.
She talks about wage gap too, right?
She talks about a lot of that. And she talks about the fact that I think that she sort of feels like this kind of plays into why people were so uncomfortable with her. Because there is this idea in our society that good women always take care of other people. Like especially if you have enough. Then a good woman goes and takes care of other people's needs. And we don't ask the same of a man. So I almost feel like that's one of those things that when people said, I don't like Hillary or I don't trust Hillary.
It's a double standard.
It was one of those things they couldn't articulate is if she's a good woman, why? And, you know, she's already got the Clinton Foundation. If she wants to take care of women and children, she can go do that. She has enough. Why does she have to take this job away from a man? You know what I mean? And I think... I think that's really ingrained in our society so deep that we may not even realize when it contributes to our feelings about powerful women, you know?
what the hesitation was for people.
I try to stop myself too sometimes, because we're all a victim of that. Sometimes I look at women, you know, political women, and I'm watching different commentaries and women I may not agree with, and I'm trying to think, okay, now listen to her argument instead of those societal programs that I have in my head, thinking, you know, I don't like what she's wearing, and her hair is weird, her lipstick color is strange. I mean, you know, you have those things in your head, and then I'm like, wait, stop, listen to what she's saying. And, you know, we're all programmed to
programmed.
So it's kind of the nice thing on the podcast.
We're hypercritical of women. Women to women, we are hypercritical.
We are.
By the way, women bosses are just as likely to hire a male less qualified than a woman.
That's interesting.
I find that women bosses have, I've had a great women bosses, but I've had women bosses who were harder on other women, women employees, for sure. It's not across the board. Women don't always look out for other women, which I think is a shame.
Yeah. Or they feel like they finally made it into the boys club, and there's only so much room in here. Right. You know,
some women do feel threatened. Yeah. They're like, I don't need another woman on my tails, you know? So let's talk about, some of these racial statistics on the wage gap. Do you want to do that, Andy?
No,
you can't get it up.
See, I didn't find you it. You lost it. Yeah.
That's all right. Karen's got them in front of her.
Oh, good.
Too,
Karen,
I think.
If you have it.
Oh, wait, there it is.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Well, it's the, women's earnings as a percentage of white men's earnings. So the women are broken down by races. This doesn't have the male.
We don't know. It's all compared to white men.
This is
men.
All what ethnic women compared to white men.
Yeah.
So Hispanic or Latina, 54 cents to the dollar. Black or African American, 63 cents to the dollar. White, 79 cents to the dollar. Asian, 87 cents to the dollar. So, like, anyone who is considered, I would say, brown, as they say, those are significantly lower. And then now you have issues of poverty, equality, maintaining above a decent living, a decent wage, let alone trying to keep up with, you know, the male in your profession.
Right. Well, here's the frustrating thing, too. Like we said, as a group, black women have the largest percentage of their own group who are in college compared to any other group in America. So they're the most educated group in this country.
It's time to take them seriously.
They're the second lowest earners compared to white men.
Doesn't make sense.
And we know that education doesn't make a difference. I mean, it's shown that the wage gap still exists no matter how educated women get. But think about how frustrating it is to be an educated black woman. So here's
how hard you have to prove yourself.
Yeah, so here's a challenge for white women, because obviously black women, Hispanic women, they're totally capable of advocating for themselves. They're way ahead of us when it comes to
being outspoken.
Being able to speak for themselves, resisting
organizing.
All of that. Is there anything that we can do?
I wish I was in a position to hire people.
Yeah, hire people of color.
Hire people, period. You know.
Well, that's one thing. Yeah. Is I do think that this is a scenario that's unique, where white women have a unique opportunity to actually support other women, because this is something that does impact all of us, regardless of race. So I can't tell other people's stories. I can't speak to the experience of being a woman of color, but if I can tell my own story as a white woman, I'm validating their story, and I'm adding another voice to the chorus, at least on the issue of gender. We have to keep women of color at the center of the conversation, but we can sort of amplify and validate what they're saying by advocating for ourselves, by telling our own stories in this case. So it's kind of a unique opportunity for us to participate in the dialogue in a way that
and advocating for just equal pay for equal work. It doesn't matter what group is rising with it or not.
Right.
It's a very straight blanket concept.
Right.
You know, you can all rise together.
It's an injustice.
Exactly. So
we can
really
all stand
the
as
advocating
women.
Together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not even women, but minority men.
Yeah.
Equal pay for equal work.
Right. Right. But besides that, the justice issue, there's also, like I said, I know working white women who voted for Trump, right? So there was someone, Karen, you recommended a podcast this week, The Longest Shortest Time.
Loved it. Thank you for
that. Was a really good one.
It's a great one.
Yeah. And they were talking about, you know, talking to your kids about race, but they also had that very interesting interview with, now I'm going to forget that woman's name, Ellis. The woman who...
Yeah, I can't remember her name now. I'd have to look up on my pod list, but yes.
We'll post it to the Facebook page.
Yes,
but anyways,
I'll find it.
She was talking about what a lot of activists
and
have
she's
said.
A white woman. She's a white woman.
Right, but she talks to a lot of activists. And writes on race a lot. And she was saying how one of the things that they say to her is that it's not necessarily that we want your help. We want you to recognize or help other white people recognize that this is hurting all of us.
Yeah.
And I think that this is one issue where we can say to, look, you may not care about racial injustice. You may not care about people in poverty, but this is killing you, too. It's costing you, as a working woman, $1 million over your lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Women's issues are women's issues. There are fundamental struggles amongst women that are, you know, for all of us.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
I thought that was such an honest conversation because, you know, she started off by saying, you know, I'm a supporter, I think. I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
An ally. You know, she was asking if she was a good ally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She responded by saying, well, we'll see. You know, and I think that was such a good response is basically all you could do is just continue to be educated and continue to, you know, spread the word, like we said.
Right.
That women's issues are women's issues. We all care about fundamentally the same things.
That'll be another topic for us to have on the podcast is how to be a good ally. How do you know if you're a good ally?
Well, I like how she pointed out being honest and I can't presuppose I know your battle.
Exactly.
And her response to that was like, thank you for acknowledging that. Just like,
right.
And now let's see, have at it. Go out there and advocate for me. I'm all for it, you know?
Right.
See what you do. But again, boiling it down to it's your daily actions, right? It's all our daily actions.
Right. So I just looked it up. So the writer is Eula Biss, and the episode was called White Guilt and Other Crazy S-H-I-T. episode number 135 on the Longest Shortest Time podcast. And it was really... Interesting. Yeah.
It was very good.
Good episode. Good recommendation, Karen. So we'll post that on the Facebook page too.
Good.
So at this point, I think the best that we can do, like we said, is really pay attention, advocate for ourselves, keep telling our own stories, and keep pushing Congress. Because,
that's what I was going to say, legislation. Mm-hmm. Where do we get to step up to the plate for pushing legislation through?
There's still an opportunity to push for the EEOC funding to be included in the Capitol budget. I think it's a long shot this year.
Yeah.
But maybe there's other organizations that are willing to do the work to try and collect this data. I don't know. I mean, you would have to mandate employers to provide it. So that's probably a long shot too.
But I don't like to provide that.
Yeah.
But makes targets.
We have an opportunity, you know, to change our leadership here in 2018 and 2020. And I think we just have to really push for people who care about these issues.
Equality.
And make sure they're willing to take a stand on women's issues.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So next week when hopefully Jackie will be able to be back next week and she can tell us what people say about why they believe the gap doesn't exist.
Yes.
The myth.
Yes. And that might be the comparing apples to oranges, I wonder. I don't
know. Well, like we said, I feel like, I mean, yes. This is another thing that's really, I wrestle with this idea of biology, right? Like, so as women, we are the ones who have to take time off to have children, right? And may, there's an argument, you know, some people say, well, women have stronger desire to spend time with their kids. I know my husband wanted to be home with our son, and he was for part of that time. So I don't know if that's an accurate representation of men's and women's roles or desires. But physically, men cannot bear children,
at least for 9 months. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we need to take time off to do that. And I can see, like, if I'm I'm in a job and I'm sitting next to a guy and we're doing the same job, but then I say I'm going to be gone because I'm going to have a baby. So he's working through that time, and then I come back. And let's say they need, there's a promotion, a space that opens up for a promotion. Is it fair for me to get the promotion if we're doing the same job, but I took all that time off? I mean, it's the biology is a really hard one
and
to choice. Deal with.
It's like as we make our daily lifestyle choices, whether you're a man or woman or anything, you know, you can prioritize different things. And you would say, I gave up that opportunity, that promotion to do this other thing I value more.
Right.
So again, I could see how for myth folks that may play into it too.
Right. But I will say this, there are women who don't have children who choose to focus on their careers, and they shouldn't be punished just because of their gender, because they're not taking time off. You know what I mean? The assumption that because you're a woman, you're going to take time off is also not fair. So it's so, like you said, Karen, it's really complex. And
I would say it depends.
Yeah.
You know, it depends what that woman's situation is.
Yeah, it does depend. And somebody's got to figure out a system that.
All we're asking is for equal pay for equal work. You know, if I'm going to take 2 days off a week to be with my kid and you're going to work 5, then you should get the promotion, male or female.
Well, you should get like 100% of the pay and I get 3/5 of the pay for that. I don't know if he needs to get the. What if you're better at it? You could still get the promotion.
Like I feel like your hourly pay should be the same, though, right? If you're doing the same job, but you happen to be doing it fewer hours.
Equal pay for equal work. Yeah. But like I'm saying, if there's the promotion and it requires me to be there full time, I have chosen to be there 3 days
right.
a week,
then you chose to pass on the opportunity.
Right. Then that person. Yeah. Is able to make that commitment at that time, you know, male or female. But it's that whole thing. We have to make a choice and the sacrifice.
Right.
So, but, you know, my husband has made sacrifices. He's not taken jobs that would take him away from our family months at a time.
Yes.
So, you know, he's sacrificed higher pay for that, too.
Right.
I mean, it's, again, one of those things. Where it's just not as simple yes and no. And yes, it depends what career you're in. Because teachers are on a set pay scale, but there's this complexity, you know, of opportunity that also runs through.
And like you say, being groomed, moving, rising up quicker to admin.
You're a brand new teacher, and in 3 years, you're principal.
Well, I see that all the time, too.
And it is predominantly males.
I do see that.
Yeah, that seems wrong. I'm not a teacher, but that doesn't seem right to me.
It hasn't always worked out.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, I have seen, this was a while ago, and a friend of mine posted on Facebook. He runs a finance company where he gives people financial advice. And the post was a woman working in his office surrounded, like she was with her baby, and they were all around the conference table. And just, she was like, how great this is, what a progressive company to say, just bring your kid in and still come to the meetings and still. Yeah. And I thought, wow, what a nice shift that is. And it'd be nice to see more of that in the workplace.
I did know a woman who, she had her own business, but she just made that her attitude was like, if I have a meeting, I'm bringing my kid and just deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have to tell you, when I had my first child, I had an interview and my sitter fell through at the last minute. And this wonderful woman who turned out to be one of the best bosses I ever had, she said, bring the baby in. And I brought my Kaylee in for my interview.
That's great.
Still in the same job 15 years later.
Oh, my goodness.
She let me bring the baby in. She was probably three or 4 weeks old at the time.
Oh, my God.
You know, into the interview. She held the baby while I talked to her. And, I mean, it was just the most amazing thing. And I walked out of there saying, oh, God, please, this is perfect. You know, please let this
That's someone you want to work for.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's to me, that was a huge victory.
So that's like beyond, that's beyond solving the wage gap. That's like utopia.
Right.
You know, can you imagine if she said, oh, I'm sorry, you couldn't get a babysitter. I wouldn't be at the position I am here 15 years later.
Right.
I mean, all it would have taken was one person to say, well, that's not going to work. You know, not going to support you. Too bad. Couldn't find childcare. Yeah, I mean,
and you know that happens all the time.
It does. I just
I remember being so stressed out in marketing when I think you get 3 days off a year for sick, and I was like, if you're going to have kids, I see parents in my class just very stressed out of they send the kids to school sick because they can't lose their job.
Kids are sick more than 3 days a year.
Yeah, absolutely. I can attest to that because I have one of those. So you have 2 weeks of vacation and I don't know, 4 or 5 sick days maybe. Mm-hmm. But you wind up, you know, using up your vacation days, using up your sick days for when your kids are sick. There's definitely, you know.
And then you're going to get sick, so.
Yeah, life and family balance. That's another, that would be a good topic for us to look into.
Reprioritize. Yeah.
Ideas for that. What company should we be working at?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so that is the wage gap for this week, but I'm sure we'll revisit it, especially when we find out what Jackie has to say when she gets back with us. So, you guys, do you have yes, no's for this week? I know Andrea has
I had my little yes. I forget what we were talking about back a little bit
Something
ago.
Something about conversations.
Well, about little groups making steps forward to have their voice. So, at our school, there's a group of teenagers not standing taking a knee for the flag, for the pledge.
Aww.
And I just saw that in an email coming out to the teachers today. Great. It just ran out to our school today, and it said, hey, according to Ed Code, they have every right to do that. Do not discipline a kid or getting in their way for doing that. And I was like, good for them. I got to go find out who those
That's
kids are.
Cool.
And
I
was
that.
Very proud of them, even though I haven't put the faces yet because I just got the email today. So I was like,
very
good for
brave.
Them. I'm so proud and brave, and they're being advocates and taking a stand, and I'm just really proud of them.
Me too. Do you have a no? Or?
Bush's tweets to Puerto Rico are my big. Or, I'm sorry, Trump. I do that all the time. This is kind of Freudian slip. My Trump's tweet to.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's my no.
Such
that's
a big no.
No, no. Who hiss no.
Yeah, I saw something earlier today where they were saying like. Somebody had leaked some memos about how, you know, they were trying to, in the White House, figure out how to spin this and what should we say to sort of mitigate some of the damage. And then Trump ignored it and woke up the next morning and tweeted at the mayor of San Juan. And, I mean,
guy's
a nut.
Yes. And you wonder that original tweet, too, how much is that because she was a woman? And you know what I mean? That all plays into
it. And a woman of color.
The way he speaks.
Yeah. Does not like women or people of color.
So bizarre.
Oh, no. Yes. If a woman stands up and says something, she's going to be barraged.
She's a nasty woman.
Nasty. It's nasty.
Yeah. And by the way, how dare she interrupt his golf game to have a tragedy?
Yes, he's golfing this week.
He needs to golf.
Nobody else can go to Puerto Rico until he goes, but he has to play golf. First.
Right. For the, 69th time?
And I think he even, one of his criticisms of Obama was Obama's vacation.
Oh, constantly.
So it's
constantly.
Just hysterical. It's just hysterical. He
has gone more in like the first, 6 to 7 months than Obama went in all 4 years of the White House. So, I mean, it's the most ludicrous thing ever.
Karen, do you have a yes and a no?
Yes,
or
I do.
A yes or a no?
Got to get to my little... here we go. Okay, my yes is Colin Kaepernick named NFL Players Association Community MVP for week one. He is a free agent, as you know, and most would argue it is because of Bend the Knee. He was voted the community MVP on Friday by all the NFL players for what he started.
And what he's done. Beautiful. Yeah. I'm thrilled.
They honored him for empowering underserved communities through donations and grassroots outreach. He has made $100,000 in donations on September 7th, and he's unemployed at the moment. He also
somebody gave that man a job.
Yeah, $25,000 to four different charities for the inner city youth group Dream, which is Coalition for the Homeless, another group for child incarceration, another for the Gathering for Justice's War on Children, and an equality group for immigrant youth. I just thought that was great that the players are now behind him. And so, you know, hopefully he gets signed.
Yeah, so now pick him up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And my no is that Trump's contradiction of Tillerson on North Korea in his latest series of put-downs, which the Washington Post has a very good article on, which I can post to the website. But, he publicly contradicts his Secretary of State. And tells him he's wasting time to negotiate with the little rocket man, which is,
Gosh.
Korea.
Talk about bad bosses. He's right. like the boss from hell. Can you imagine if your boss contradicted everything, publicly contradicted you on everything you did? Yeah.
And the fact that he keeps calling him the Rocket Man is just like, I mean, so those are my yes and no. Those are my big foci for the week.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
So my yes is in the spirit of trying to find points of commonality. I wanted to recommend the podcast called The Nod. It's do you listen to that, Karen?
I love it.
I love it. So there's a male and a woman host, a man and a woman host, and they talk about Black culture, but they do it like in the most entertaining and engaging way. You don't feel excluded. You feel included in the conversation. And they talk about, I know like Eric Eddings did a episode where he talked about choosing a preschool for his child. And one of the things where they were wrestling with is should it be an Afrocentric preschool? But just the whole journey of picking a preschool for your child, I was like in tears at the end because I remember how emotional that was.
I remember that too. It was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just, but they do things like they talk about, they spent one episode with a couple of guests where they just talked about one character in one show. And they talk about, this last episode I listened to was about grape drink. Did you hear that one, Karen?
Mm-hmm.
They talk about grape drink, which is like Dave Chappelle does a whole bit in his comedy act
not
about
juice.
It's not grape juice, it's grape drink. And but I mean, they go into the nitty gritty of what creates grape flavor and how this is like a historical thing. That...
Yeah, they always put in a historical perspective.
I'm curious about that because I have to say grape is my favorite drink. Grape drink, I'm crazy for grape drink.
Yeah, well, you'll like this episode. It's really interesting. Interesting. But like I said, you just find yourself finding you get some insight into Black culture and what's important to them, but you also find so many points of commonality in our own experience. Like you said, you like grape drink, okay?
Yeah,
so,
I love grape drink. Yeah. And no one, I've never met anyone else who loves grape drink.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. And like I said, the hosts are great. They're so smart.
Brittany Luce. Yeah. Brittany Luce.
Yeah, they're smart and they're good reporters, and I just couldn't recommend it more.
Excited.
I enjoy it every time I listen to it. So that's my yes and my no. I've been wanting to say this for a while, so I'm just going to say it now that Hillary's back out in the world talking. I get so mad at people who say Hillary should be quiet because she lost the election.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just feel like that is being a really lazy citizen.
Yes,
yeah. Because...
our politicians work for us, and if she didn't lose, we didn't get her elected, you know what I mean?
Right.
And if you didn't like Hillary as a candidate, then you should have worked harder to get someone else as your candidate. It's just so ridiculous to put all the blame
and like
on
they
her.
And like they shouldn't do anything after that. Like,
yeah, it's
you should be honored that she wants to still be out there and get messages out and
it's this idea.
Be a participant.
Yeah, she recognizes her influence and is willing to continue to commit herself to promoting women's issues.
Right. And she could just go kick it, but she's not.
She can say, she could talk, it's America. She could say whatever she wants whenever she wants.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that's the great thing about her.
Yeah. Right. And she has something really important to say about
this.
Yeah, she's trying to understand, too, why she lost. And I think it's really important that we struggle with that as Democrats.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yes. To understand.
Yeah, and she has some very valuable insight. But, you know, putting aside all the sexism and everything else about that, I just feel like if there's one thing we've learned, it's like we can't absolve ourselves of this situation. You know, just so it's like, well, Hillary lost and... You didn't pick my candidate to start with, so I'm all good. You know, I'm just going to sit back and blame everybody else.
But are you good? Look what's happening.
That makes me so mad. That makes me so mad. So that's it, you guys.
All right.
Have we saved the world
again? Another
night. Did we?
One step forward.
One more step.
One step a day.
We made a dent. We made a dent.
One voice. One sound wave.
Yeah. You guys have any ideas about what you want to talk about next week?
My parents are here. I will be sitting out next week.
Andrea won't be with us.
I have to decline. I'm choosing to spend quality time with my parents, who I don't see very often.
You have every right. And you won't be fired.
I won't be fired. My spot on the couch will be gone by the time I come back.
You're fired. Yeah. Well, we'll find a hot topic, yeah. Right, Karen?
I have a few ideas.
Okay.
I'll articulate them better, though. I have to articulate them better. Okay. Right now, they're flying around to my annoyance.
Well, powwow. Well, hopefully, so many. We may have Jackie back. We may have Pam back. We may have another mom talking. You never know who's going to pop in.
Yep.
So, all right, you guys.
One island at a time, ladies. We'll do this.
All right, that's it for Mom's Talking.
Bye. Signing off. Just a couple of moms.